contents of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. Today, I'm going to start with a couple of articles from Health Immunity, and this is about vaccinations, and specifically the flu shot. How effective is the flu shot? Here's what doctors want you to know about the vaccine. Yes, you still need to get it. Throughout your life, you've probably heard two main things about the flu shot: that you should get it every single year, and that even if you do get it, it might not completely protect you from the flu. Turns out, both of these things are right. That's because while the flu shot is proven to help you protect you against the flu, flu vaccines aren't made with 100% certainty. They are made before flu season even starts, after all. Still, after years of making flu vaccines, experts have a pretty good idea of what works and what doesn't. How? It's all pretty complex. We use data from the 2018's Northern Hemisphere flu season because that ends in February-March, and the decision about which strains to include in the vaccine happens around the same time. Yvonne Maldonado, MD, an infectious diseases physician at Stanford Healthcare, tells Health, who adds that data from the Southern Hemisphere's prior flu season, which runs from April to September, is also factored in. Dr. Maldonado says that several estimation and predictive models are used in the decision-making process. But it's always possible that a rogue virus will show up and lower the vaccine's overall effectiveness for the season. She calls the virus tricky and says that even after all this time, no one really understands exactly how it works. Take the year 2018, for example. In that year, one of the strains had major mutations and rendered the vaccine ineffective against that particular strain, and there's no way to predict that, she said. So, yes, the flu virus has a mind of its own, and all of the predictive models in the world can't guess at what it might do. But that doesn't mean the vaccine is pointless. It can, and often does, provide valuable protection against a nasty illness. With that in mind, here's what to know about this year's flu shot and flu shots in general when it comes to their effectiveness, as well as what other factors influence how well it protects you from the flu. How effective is it? Researchers can figure out the effectiveness of the vaccine only in retrospect, as the flu season is winding down. Generally speaking, though, the vaccine's effectiveness can vary from as little as 10% to as much as 60 or 70%, says Dr. Maldonado, with 40 to 60% being the average. But even that 40 to 60% effectiveness statistic can vary between people. That means your individual health status can change how effective the flu shot is for you. Take immunocompromised people, for example. Anyone who is undergoing chemotherapy or radiation, taking another medication, or has a health condition that lowers their immune response. Those people, while they should still get the shot, won't have as much protection against the flu as a healthy person. That's actually one of the main reasons to get the flu shot, Jennifer Hanrahan, MD, Chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at the University of Toledo Medical Center, tells Health. You're helping others in your community who have lowered immunity. Another thing that won't necessarily dictate your flu shot's effectiveness, but can make a difference in whether you get the flu, even with the vaccine, your flu timings, the shot's timing. In general, it takes about 2 to 4 weeks for the flu shot to become effective in your body, which means if you're exposed to the flu during that period, you could still technically get the virus. Also, if you get your flu shot too early in the year, say when it first becomes available in August or September, it may not last you through the entire flu season. So your best bet is to get the flu shot by the end of October. Oops, we missed that one, says Dr. Hanrahan. Of course, even when you have your flu shot, you still need to protect yourself against the flu. Not 100% effective, remember? Basically, everything your mother ever told you to do to stay healthy, you should do, says Dr. Hanrahan. Get plenty of sleep, don't smoke, and wash your hands frequently, especially after you've been out in public. And if you do end up getting the flu this year, you can still contribute to your overall health of your community by staying home and practicing good hygiene, such as coughing into your elbow instead of your hand. Now, our next article is entitled, Why Missing My Flu Shot Could Put My Best Friend's Life in Danger. Reminder, getting the flu shot isn't just about you. It's true. Part of why I get the flu shot each year is based on totally selfish reasons. I'm not trying to miss 2 weeks of work coughing, sneezing, and consuming bland liquids, and I don't necessarily want to spend the holidays in bed. But let's be real. I'm 24, and aside from the occasional migraine that can leave me bedridden, I'm healthy. If I did manage to catch the flu, I would likely be just miserable for a few days without any real complaints or complications. But the same can't be said for my best friend, Anne. Anne and I have been friends for 6 years, and we hang out a lot. We have Riverdale viewing parties, and we're already planning who's bringing what to our upcoming Friendsgiving celebration. And because we're together pretty much every weekend, she's the real reason I get my flu shot every single year. See, Anne has a condition called ankylosing spondylitis, which is an inflammatory form of arthritis. It causes her to experience chronic debilitating pain. She takes a drug called Humira to treat her condition. It's an immunosuppressant, which basically means that it lowers the ability of her immune system to fight off infections, according to the drug's website. Because of her lowered immune system function, Anne explains to me via text right now, but also as she's done many times before, that her chances of getting the flu are greater than mine. If I'm surrounded by people who have the virus, obviously I'm more likely to get it, she said, even if she gets the flu shot herself. Also, when I do get the flu or another preventable virus, it can take me a significantly longer time to get rid of it. That means while I might be stuck in bed with a fever, aches, and sniffles for a few days, Anne is more likely to develop some major flu complications like pneumonia, brain inflammation, and even kidney failure, according to the CDC. Even more, Anne's risk of complications is greater even when she takes the flu shot, which she does. So yeah, because I want to see Anne all year round, not just during the summer months when the people are typically healthier, I suck it up and get that 15-second flu jab. But it's not just me and Anne's other friends who keep her safe. I asked my coworkers to get the vaccine, since we spend tons of time in conference rooms together. Well, not right now. She says immunocompromised individuals have to worry about making sure their family members, friends, and coworkers all get the flu shot so that they don't end up in the hospital. Quick FYI. This, when the people around an immunocompromised person make sure to get their flu shots, is known as herd immunity, which gives them indirect protection against viruses. Where herd immunity exists, fewer people get sick and fewer germs are able to spread from person to person. Herd immunity protects people who cannot be vaccinated because their immune systems aren't strong enough and are therefore the most vulnerable to serious illness, and also those who are allergic to these vaccines. And honestly, there's a good chance you, too, have an Anne in your life. Maybe you have a grandparent who lives in an assisted living facility. being the person who infects an entire community of elderly people isn't a good look. Or maybe a close friend or family member just had a baby. Kids can't get the flu shots until they're 6 months old. The bottom line here? Getting vaccinated is about much more than your own health, though that's also a fine reason to hit up a drugstore for the flu shot next season. It's about protecting everyone around you, your friends, your coworkers, or even that stranger you just brushed arms with on the street. Now let's move on to an article from the Essential Retirement Guide. And this one is about finances. Required minimum distributions. Understand the rules governing withdrawal. Since contributions to the traditional retirement accounts are not taxed as income when you put money into the account, you are not required to pay taxes on it right away. However, the IRS will collect taxes eventually. That's why you must begin taking required minimum distribution, RMDs, from qualifying accounts when you reach the age of 72. Not all retirement accounts have RMDs, so it's important to know which accounts require them, how much you need to withdraw, and when you'll need to take that distribution. Accounts with RMDs include traditional IRAs, SEP and simple IRAs, traditional and Roth 401k plans, all other employee-sponsored plans, including profit sharing, 403b, and 457b plans. Accounts without RMDs are Roth IRAs. How to handle distribution. There are several rules that affect your distributions. How much you must withdraw will be calculated using the IRS Uniform Lifetime Table. At age 70, the standard divisor is 27.4, which calculates a rate of 3.65%, age divided by divisor, for your first RMD. At age 71, the divisor is 26.5, and the required percentage of your portfolio rises to 3.77%. Each year, the divisor decreases slightly, so you're required to withdraw a larger portion of your savings as you age. You must calculate the RMD separately for each qualified account based on the value of the amount on December 31st of the previous year. You'll also need to be aware of when you can withdraw. You must make your first RMD by April 1st of the year after you turn 72. The exception? All RMDs were waived for 2020. Even if you turn 72 in December 2021, for example, you must take your first RMD by April of 2022. Then you'll need to make subsequent RMDs before December 31st of the current year. In this scenario, it may be wise to take the first RMD in December of 2021 and the following RMD in 2022, so you're not making two large withdrawals in the same calendar year. After the first 2 years, there will be no overlap in the timeline for your withdrawals. Lastly, you can take your RMD either as a lump sum or as an automatic monthly withdrawal. Those who receive a lump sum typically reinvest most of it. There is an exception to these rules. If your spouse is more than 10 years younger than you and is your only beneficiary, the IRS allows you to use a larger divisor, which decreases the amount of your RMD and allows more money to stay in your account. If at any time you don't take RMDs, or if the distributions are not large enough, you may have to pay a 50% excise tax on the amount your distribution would have been had you taken it as required. So the pro tip for this article, understand which of your accounts include required minimum distributions and which don't, so you can plan for them. Now we're going to the AARP magazine. Black Voices Matter. We're at a critical moment in our country's troubled racial history, but it is far from our first reckoning. The words of African Americans calling for racial justice resound from generation to generation. This is a long article, and I may not be able to do the entire one today, but if not, I'll continue next time. From the moment the first abducted Africans found themselves enslaved and oppressed on America's shores, freedom became their singular ambition. And through the centuries, for their children and their children's children, that most human desire remained constant and basic. They demanded freedom from bondage and the atrocities of rape, beatings, and family separations. Freedom from lynching and political disenfranchisement. Freedom from segregation, redlining, police brutality, discrimination. Freedom, finally, from all the effects of racial hatred, which has long distorted our nation's democratic ideals. Over the summer, last summer, the nationwide protests spurred by the killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery gave renewed urgency to these calls. They also underscored the grinding nature of progress. For despite the civil rights gains of previous generations, formidable work remains to be done. Yet, as our history has shown, Black thinkers and activists, from the poorest of the poor to those with great power and means, have been critical in challenging America to do this work. Their voices matter. Their words, some reflected on these pages, express deep outrage and suffering, but also tremendous love and hope for their community and their country. Some of their calls for justice have been answered through legislation or litigation. Other demands remain painfully timely. Together, they offer a powerful opportunity to honor the past while working together to create a better, more just future for all. Now here's some quotes. Mother and Child. Elizabeth Catlett, 1944, Metropolitan Museum of Art. O ye nominal Christians, is it not enough that we are torn from our country and friends to toil for your luxury and lust of gain? Why are parents to lose their children, brothers, their sisters or husbands, their wives? Surely this is a new refinement in cruelty and adds fresh horrors even to the wretchedness of slavery. And that was by Ulanda Equiano, former enslaved person, 1789. I had reasoned this out in my mind. There was one of two things I had a right to, liberty or death. If I could not have one, I would have the other, for no man should take me alive. That was by Harriet Tubman, abolitionist, a leader of the Underground Railroad, 1868. Now, this from Robert Smalls, U.S. Congressman, 1895. My race needs no special defense, for the past history of them in this country proves them to be equal of any people anywhere. All they need is an equal chance in the battle of life. Now, from W.E.B. Du Bois, socialist, historian, and activist, in the year 1897, it is a peculiar sensation, this double consciousness, this sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others. One ever feels this twosome, an American, a Negro, two souls, two thoughts, two unreconciled strivings, two warring ideals in one dark body, whose dogged strength alone keeps it from being torn asunder. This from Ida B. Wells Barnett, political journalist and teacher, 1900. Our watchword has been the land of the free and the home of the brave. Brave men do not gather by thousands to torture and murder a single individual, so gagged and bound he cannot make even feeble resistance or defense. Neither do brave men and women stand by and see such things done without compunction of conscience, nor read of them without protest. The next from Mary Church Terrell, club woman, businesswoman, activist, 1906. The chasm between the principles upon which this government was founded and those which are daily practiced under the protection of the flag yawns so wide and deep. From Langston Hughes, poet and writer, 1926. We younger Negro artists who create now intend to express our individual dark-skinned selves without fear or shame. If white people are pleased, we are glad. If they are not, it doesn't matter. We know we are beautiful. From Carter G. Woodson, educator and historian, 1933. Those who have not learned to do for themselves and have to depend solely on others never obtain any more rights or privileges in the end than they had in the beginning. Now we have a sidebar article here. 1964, this is the whole article is entitled Justice Then and Now. So in 1964, until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons, becomes as important to the rest of the country as the killing of a white mother's son, we who believe in freedom cannot rest. That was from Ella Baker, civil rights activist. In 2020, every police killing of an unarmed black man, woman, or child damages our country. These killings are a tragedy for families and communities, but they are also a strain on our nation's very soul. And that was from Sherilyn Eiffel, president, NAACP, Legal Defense and Educational Fund. Continuing on with these quotes, we have racism then and now. 1975. The function of racism is distraction. It keeps you from doing your work. It keeps you explaining over and over again your reason for being. Somebody says you have no language, and so you spend 20 years proving that you do. None of that is necessary. There will always be one more thing. That was from Toni Morrison, a novelist. In 2017, racism is not merely a simplistic hatred. It is, more often, broad sympathy towards some and broader skepticism towards others. Black America ever lives under that skeptical eye. That was from Ta-Nehisi Coates, essayist and novelist. Now moving on with more quotes, this from Richard Wright, a writer of 1941. We black folk, our history and our present being, are a mirror of all the manifold experiences of America. What we want, what we represent, what we endure is what America is. If we black folk perish, America will perish. This from Jackie Robinson, Major League Baseball player, 1954. I'm not concerned with your liking or disliking me. All I ask is that you respect me as a human being. From Daisy Bates, civil rights activist, president of Arkansas NAACP, 1963. We will kneel in, we will sit in, until we can eat in any corner in the United States. We will walk until we can take our children to any school in the United States, and we will lie in until every Negro in America can vote. This from Martin Luther King Jr., Baptist minister, civil rights leader, 1963. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, little black boys and little black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. From James Brown, singer and songwriter and bandleader, 1968, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. From Muhammad Ali, activist, heavyweight champion, 1975, I am American, only I'm the part you won't recognize. But get used to me, black, confident, cocky. My name, not yours. My religion, not yours. My goals, my own. Get used to me. And from Barbara C. Jordan, U.S. Congresswoman, 1977, what the people want is simple. They want an America as good as its promise. From Maynard Jackson, Atlanta's first black mayor, politics, although not perfect, was the best available nonviolent means of changing how we lived. Politics is not an end, it's a means to an end. From Rodney King, whose beating by police sparked riots in Los Angeles in 1992, people, I just want to say, can we all get along? Can we stop making it horrible for the older people and the kids? From Earl G. Graves, Sr., founder and publisher of Black Enterprise Magazine, 1997. Money makes people listen. When you have it, when you have something others want and need, when you don't, you become invisible. From Prince, musician, songwriter, 2015. Does anybody hear us pray for Michael Brown or Freddie Gray? Peace is more than the absence of war. Maybe we can finally say, enough is enough. It's time for love. From Alicia Garza, civil rights activist, co-founder of Black Lives Matter Movement 2015, the fight is not just being able to keep breathing. The fight is actually to be able to walk down the street with your head held high and feel like I belong here, or I deserve to be here, or I just have a right to have a level of dignity. Folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.